Great morning, everyone, and welcome to yet another episode of Thank God for Monday. I'm Brother Greg Cellini of the Franciscan Brothers of Brooklyn in the Office of Mission Ministry Interfaith Dialogue at St. Francis College in beautiful Brooklyn, New York. My great pleasure to be back again with you today. The purpose of our show, Thank God for Monday, is to inspire you, our audience, to take personal responsibility for your professional satisfaction. We want to provide you hope, healing, and peace in these unprecedented, turbulent, uncertain times. Motivate you to search deep inside yourself in the quest for fulfillment. Listeners, it's really up to you as I've utilized the information we provide today. Take full accountability for the decisions you make and the resulting outcomes. And one of the goals of our show, Thank God for Monday, is to introduce role models of people who take very bold steps in their work lives. This is a very special month, March, which is designated as Women's History Month. And International Women's Day is this Wednesday, March the 8th. As such, we are honored today to have with us not just one, but two very, very special guests. Their names are Cornelia Gamlin and Barbara Mitchell. Cornelia and Barbara are authors, speakers, and consultants. They bring a wealth of business and human resources experience to everything they do. Their latest book is entitled The Decisive Manager: Get Results, Build Morale, and Be the Boss Your People Deserve. And listeners, I'm sure you're going to recognize the voices of Cornelia and Barbara. They've been on Thank God for Monday many times and are inductees in the TGFM Hall of Fame. Great morning and welcome back, Cornelia and Barbara.
Good morning. It's a pleasure to be here again.
Good morning, Greg. It's delightful to be with you.
Thank you. The pleasure is all ours. Maybe you can share with the listeners and me what city and state each of you are speaking from. Cornelia, maybe we'll start with you, please.
Okay, even though I'm a native of New York, I'm now living in Albuquerque, New Mexico. And that's where I'm calling in from.
And I live and work in Washington, D.C.
Both of you have made the listeners and I very, very jealous. Two great hot spots in our country, that's for sure. Sadly, we've only got 30 minutes, Cornelia and Barbara. We could spend hours talking about your careers, your expertise, this amazing new book, The Decisive Manager. We're just going to jump right into the deep end of the pool because we understand the focus of the decisive manager is providing expert advice for dealing with people issues in the workplace. Question, please. Who's the intended audience of this great book? Is it HR professionals? Is it managers? Could it be possibly an overlap there? Cornelia, help us out, please.
Okay, and I think you hit it right on the nail. It is an overlap. I mean, we had managers primarily in mind when we wrote this book because we realized that so many times managers e either are really stumped when they deal with an issue, and being able to pick up this book and find an answer, first it'll give them some comfort in knowing that, hey, it's not just me that these things happen to, because the questions and answers in the book really are a combination of things that we've experienced or we know that other people have experienced. But there's also a lot of managers who don't have an HR department or professional to turn to. And it's a good starting point for them to get, again, not to, to give them some answers about how should I approach this particular issue, because they tend to be a little bit skittish because they know they're dealing with people and they want to get it right.
No question about that.
Yeah.
You know what's interesting? People have said to me there are about 5 million people who know human resources and 5 million people who know management, and about five who know both. And we're lucky enough to have two of those five. That's certainly fantastic. Now, in this book, you discuss navigating the changing workforce. Initially, it seemed like women lost ground in the workplace during the pandemic. And it was feared it would take years for them to make up this ground. Curious, Have there been some recent changes in this pattern, Barbara? What do you think, please?
Oh, yes, Greg, and we are delighted that that news is trickling out, that women are returning to the workplace at an unprecedented rate, and quite surprising because you're right, they were badly impacted at the beginning and during the pandemic. But we think what's going on here, and again, we're delighted about it, that women are asking for change and organizations are stepping up. They're asking for more flexibility, which makes it easier for women to return to the workplace. They're asking for more family-friendly policies, and it appears that organizations are taking note of this. On the flip side, it's just a really great research that was just done by McKinsey and Lean In Foundation that's finding that women at the top are leaving, are coming back to the workplace, but then they're leaving. And there have been some high-profile ones lately. Probably in the news, you've seen the Prime Minister I almost said New Mexico, Cornelia. She's not going anywhere.
No.
The Prime Minister of New Zealand has re resigned, and several CEOs, high-profile women, who apparently are just taking stock of their lives and where they want to go. And that is going to have an impact on organizations as well. So there's good news, and there may be some not so good news, but I think on the whole, it's wonderful that women are impacting change in the workplace positively.
We're probably going to talk about this a little bit later on, but how refreshing it was. Of course, the pandemic being something horrific, but a silver lining is a lot of people, especially a lot of women, took the great opportunity to look at their work life and say, is this for me? How can we improve it? Et
Yes,
cetera, et cetera.
exactly.
Now, I'd like to think I had 30 years in the corporate world, now almost 12 years in higher education. And I'm very happy to say I've seen women rise in both higher ed and pharmaceuticals in the corporate world. But are all women doing equally well, or are there still some challenges and barriers? So Cornelia, what do you think? Are there some things still to overcome, possibly?
Overall, women's participation rates recently are exceeding men's. They're returning to the workplace at a higher rate, but
Wow.
it's not across all different factors of the economy. We're seeing that women in service industries were hit hardest by the pandemic. And they're having a much harder time coming back because flexibility isn't available to them. Women who are college educated, who are going into knowledge-based jobs, are faring much better, partially because they work in industries where there is more flexibility. So they can be working from home more, or at least in a hybrid situation. Whereas women that are in lower levels of education and income, or if they're members of unrepresented groups, they're having a much harder time. And probably one of the reasons for that is we still, while we're seeing more flexibility and starting to see more family-friendly policies, we're not quite there yet. Childcare is a persistent issue, and that's an industry that really took a big hit during the pandemic, and it's slower coming back than others. And then a lot of women still don't even have paid sick leave, much less paid family leave.
Oh,
And
no.
yeah, and again, and that's usually like in those smallest segments of the economy. So that's still having an effect on them. So while we're starting to see change, and the change is positive, and women are driving the change, hopefully we're going to see that change continue.
One of the many reasons I'm so proud and happy to say I work at St. Francis College, or Franciscan College in Brooklyn, New York, is that right now there are more women than men at the college. And it's so wonderful because, as you've said, if you're in a service capacity, you've got to get up and go there. But in a knowledge-based role, you've got a lot more flexibility. And of course, it is that college degree, that undergraduate and beyond, which allows you that flexibility. So that's really wonderful. Now, one of the things here in New York City, I'm not sure about New Mexico, I'm not sure about Washington, D.C., is that people have been reticent to come back to New York City. They got used to working at home, no train, no bus, no car, and tolls and all that stuff. So help us out, please, Barbara. What advice can you give for managing a hybrid workforce or dealing with employees who literally are saying, I'm not coming back? They're refusing to come back to the office for work.
My best piece of advice would be to say one word, and that's be flexible. All managers, CEOs, whomever runs organizations, if you can provide any kind of flexibility, maybe it's coming in a day or two a week, maybe it is total work from home, but be flexible. In fact, one of the things that what Cornelia just talked about with people who work in service jobs, what we're finding is something quite interesting, that people are interested in flexibility of where they work, but also when they work. And that is
Oh.
something that if I'm running a restaurant, for example, if I can give people their schedule for a month ahead of time and stick to it so they know when they have to be at work, it changes their lives immeasurably. They can arrange for childcare if they need it, whatever it is, help with a senior parent, for example. But so many service workers don't know from day to day when they are supposed to be at work. And boy, does that make your life difficult. And so flexibility of finding what works for your organization. I'm talking to people all the time who are forced to go in. Let's say to downtown DC, which is, I'm sure, like New York, suffering. The real estate market is suffering. Restaurants are suffering because people are not going back into work. And that is an issue that we're going to have to take on. But what we find is people are being asked to go to work 1, 2, 3 days a week to get there. And there's no plan for them, there's nothing different. They don't know who's going to be there. They don't know which of their colleagues will be there. They don't know who they're supposed to collaborate with. And so they're still on Zoom doing meetings, even if they're in the office, because not everybody is there on the same days. So there's so many little nuances to this that we're just getting started with. And we hope that, as you mentioned, we have a section in each of our sections of our new book, The Decisive Manager. We talk about navigating the changing workplace and just hopefully giving some ideas for people as to how they can, if they really are interested. And it didn't work for the people. I'm not going to name any names because we could name some names of famous people who said, you're all going to come back. And if you don't come back, you're fired. Which, and then I would say to that, and how did that work for you? It
Not
did
too
not
well.
work. No, not too well. So if people can be flexible as to when they want people to be in the office, have things for them to do that make sense for them to be in the office, not just because I said so, and then give flexibility of scheduling as well, so that people can really focus on the rest of their lives.
Yeah, that is so brilliant. I would have never even considered if I work in a restaurant that if you can schedule me ahead of lunch, may be a better time for me to work than the dinner shift.
Yes.
So that would be brilliant if I could be allowed to do that, certainly.
And don't change my schedule today for tomorrow because I can't rearrange my life
Yeah,
that way.
exactly. We're going to peel the onion on this because this is fascinating to me, and I'm sure the listeners as well. What are some of the pros and cons of working remotely? How do organizations make the work from home versus in-office decision? What factors drive all this? Cornelia, what do you think about this, please?
Yeah, it's interesting because I think we can just expand on some of the things we talked about. If you talk to managers, they're going to give you all of the cons around this. They're going to say, well, people aren't together, there's no face-to-face interaction, there's fewer opportunities to make connections. And part of that's true. There's less of an opportunity to generate ideas, and therefore, innovation isn't going to happen. And they'll often cite those as reasons, and try to wrap it into it's going to change our culture dramatically. But I think in a lot of cases they're saying this and it's their own gut reaction to things. And they're really not looking at what some of the data is telling them. Because the employees are going to say, as we talked about, there's reduced commute times. And having commuted in both New York City, from Long Island into the city,
Oh no.
forget it. And then driving into DC or even taking Metro can be just as much of a challenge. I mean, there's different patterns, but they're the same challenge. People sometimes would spend an hour and a half on, just on the road to get to where they're going. And by the time they get into the office, that they're exhausted. So they're talking about less commuting, or reduced commute times. If they're working at home, there's fewer distractions, so they can be more focused, especially now that, the kids are back in school. I mean, it was different during the pandemic. But it gives, back to that flexibility, it gives them that opportunity to be flexible, and it gives them that better balance in their life. So that's what they're going to cite. And they're also going to say productivity really isn't suffering because they have that opportunity to collaborate because we have so many tools. And I know we're going to be talking about that a little bit more, but the technology has changed so much. So it's, there are better opportunities. And then I think what's driving a lot of it, though, a lot of the decisions is, as we've talked about, what's going on, especially in major downtown, metropolitan areas, because it is suffering, and there's some pressure, I think, that's being put on organizations around from the mayors, from the people who are running the city,
Sure,
saying, "Hey,
absolutely, yeah.
what about our tax base?" So all of it kind of wraps in together.
Yeah, no doubt about it. Not easy decisions to make, that's for sure. One interesting thing since the past year, since you graced our airwaves here, some new buzzwords. The Great Resignation, quiet quitting, just two of them. Does your book, are you able to address these issues in this new great book of yours?
We don't address them by those names because we wrote this book before all of this media hype happened. But we do address how what organizations can do to not be the ones that people are leaving, but the ones where people are staying. And we're very positive people. We like to approach things from that perspective rather than the negatives. And it's again, it's a simple but very complicated world we live in. The simplicity is if you treat your people well, if you are giving them development opportunities, if you are acknowledging the work that they're doing, if you are being flexible on when and where they work, odds are you're not going to be impacted by the quiet quitting or the great resignation. People want to work for organizations that value them. It's my favorite word of the year is value, and it goes both ways. Are you as an employee providing value to your employer, and is the employer valuing the work that you do? If that happens on both sides, odds are that you're going to be the organization people want to work for and stay with. And whether it's quiet quitting or just quitting in general, they're going to want to stay with you because they are enjoying the work that they're doing and they feel valued. And of course, you're paying them fairly, you're giving them good benefits, they're having some fun at work, all that. We tackle all of those, giving lots of ideas in the book of how you can be a good manager and a good company.
This book is so chock full of nuggets. And before we depart, certainly you're going to share with us where we can find this great book. Now, let's peel the onion a bit more because just talked a little bit about developing employees. Cornelia, what are some of the things a manager can do to develop employees and advance careers?
I think one of the things, managers can personally do things as long as they have the support of their organizations and they develop the culture of lifelong learning. So if they're encouraging their employees to learn more about the field that they work in, and if they're doing it themselves and leading by example, that's really the starting point of, you've kind of set the stage for it. Beyond that, encourage people to participate in learning events, and there are so many anymore. But then have them bring back what they've learned, have them share with their
Oh,
colleagues, because that makes them, first of all, it shows that you're appreciating what they're doing. You can set them up in some cases to be the subject matter expert, particularly if it's something new. And so then they now become the go-to person. So that becomes a motivator. And then other people will say, gee, I want to participate in some new events. There are so many platforms out there. In fact, this week, I know Barbara and I listened to one webinar that just happened to have been on it together about using mobile technology. And you can use a lot of mobile technology for what they call micro-learning these days, where it's
Oh, wow.
short bursts. Yeah, some of this stuff is really, really cool. And
Yeah.
then we were also talking to a woman the other night on a call that they've taken a their platform where they actually put where people can just put their podcasts on it, and they're now turning it into an enterprise product so that companies can start to use it for learning, so that they can develop more learning events that their employees can just listen to on the run if they're still commuting or if they're driving their car or just want to sit back and kick back. So there's all of these things that managers can be doing, and as long as their company is going to support the technology. But if you're setting goals for the employees, if you're developing individual development plans for them, those are all the things that will help to encourage them to learn more, and they're going to stick around because that's what they want, especially the newer entrants, the younger generation. They want to keep learning stuff.
Well, that's what I'm seeing, certainly more and more as we hire some of the alums, the recent alums, where they just soak it in like a sponge. It's amazing. Now, there's been hiring going on, but there's been a few companies, Twitter being one, Goldman Sachs another, talking about layoffs. Any advice for how layoffs should be managed?
I guess I was going to say, the
Go
first thing
ahead.
I'd say is don't pay attention to what you're reading in
Oh,
the
great.
Yeah,
news. Some of them are
don't do
doing it
what they do.
poorly.
Yeah, right. Yeah, we have lots of thoughts about this, and you go back to how you take care of your employees. Don't do layoffs by text. Don't do layoffs by phone calls. There's just ways to do it, and obviously to explain to people the whys and prepare them, and give them a reason to feel good about you when they leave. But also the biggest thing that I could harp on this for the rest of the time we have left, Greg, is to talk about how you take care of the people that are left after a layoff. And so many organizations
Wow.
do this in phases where they'll say, okay, the first wave, we're going to lay off 4,000 people, but there'll be more to come. Well, what happens to the rest of those employees who then they are just paralyzed because they think, am I going to be in the next wave? What should I
Oh,
do? Maybe I
wow.
should leave. And this happens over and over again. So if you're going to do a layoff, plan it carefully. Do it as if you can do it all at once. And then take really good care of the people that are left because they have lost their friends who've been laid off. They've lost their coworkers. Could be their best friend at work who's gone. And they then have to pick up the slack and do that person's work. So think about all of what happens after the layoff. Plan it carefully. Select the right people that you have to lay off, but then don't forget the ones that are left.
Behind. Wow. Oh, that's very, very important. Thank you for pointing that out. Sadly, believe it or not, we've only got 6 minutes, but I have a couple of still very important questions to ask. One of the things that in Big Pharma we got used to and higher ed, meetings. I would think meetings, something else has changed dramatically. What are some of the innovative ways people are managing meetings and getting employees to collaborate and share information?
Well, first of all, Cornelia mentioned the technology that's available, and that's really a key. Spend some time researching what technology might be available for you and your group for meetings. But one of my pet peeves is meetings just because you've always had the meeting for 27 years, you've met on Monday at 3 o'clock,
Oh, wow.
and nobody's thought about why or is it still valuable? And then the other thing is who should be invited? Who is necessary to be at the meeting? Before you call a meeting, think about who needs to be there. Who are the decision makers? Who's going to add value? And you cannot imagine how people feel if they suddenly are not invited to a meeting. You think that they would be concerned that they're going to be laid off or whatever. No, typically they are so delighted to have that time that they can do something else with. So think about who needs to be invited. Then obviously you've got to have an agenda. You've got to have a timekeeper. I love the idea of rotating who facilitates meetings. The manager,
Oh.
don't always have the manager run the meeting. Have the manager participate. Let somebody else be the timekeeper, be the agenda follower, so that and people learn from that experience as well. So there's lots that can be done, and you'll make people very happy if you have fewer meetings.
That is for sure, no doubt about it. This is the second to last and question. It's very important. So I want to get both of your input on this, if that's okay. Trust is so central to managing people. How can decisive managers build trust with their team members? Cornelia, would you start us off, please?
Sure, and I'm so glad you asked that question because I was involved in a situation doing a little investigation for a company recently, and I mean somebody in the senior leadership team had undercut one of her peers, and
Oh.
it was re really a bad situation, and then it's so hard to gain that trust back when something like that happens. So I think one of the most important things that organizations and managers need to think about is you need to be transparent. You need to be as honest as you can. And like getting back to layoffs, well, it doesn't mean you come out of a meeting and you automatically share there's going to be layoffs with your team. You want to share information as you can and as it's appropriate, but you also don't want to backpedal on information as well. Show that you're vulnerable because I think that's something managers often feel like, if they see me doing something wrong, if I make a mistake, what's the message it's going to send? Well, the message it's going to send is you're a human being and none of us is perfect. And that really goes so far. And I think the other thing I would say is be consistent. Be consistent in your actions and be consistent in your decisions. Because if you're kind of all over the place, people are going to just say, nah, I really don't trust what they're doing and what they're saying.
Wow. Barbara,
And
would
I
you like
have
to add a
just
little bit to that?
one quick thing to add, and that is mean what you say, do what you committed to, be as upfront with your employees as you can, and just don't let them down. Now, sometimes managers have to make very difficult decisions, but if you can explain to somebody why you can't do something, it will build trust and that they will think you're an honest person and they will value that.
Yeah, absolutely. No question about it. We've saved our most important question for last. Where can our loyal listeners purchase this great book, The Decisive Manager?
It's available from every major bookseller, Amazon, Barnes and Noble. There are a number of independent bookstores that you can get it from by going to Bookshop and IndieBound. So if you want to support local bookstores in your own communities, it's a great way to do that.
Terrific. Listeners, no excuse. The decisive manager is all over. Pick up one for yourself. We've had two great Franciscans with us today, Cornelia and Barbara. They didn't hold on to the good, they shared the good. Now it's your turn. Pick up one for yourself. Pick up a couple to give to some managers, maybe friends of yours, family. This is a book that can drastically enhance our workplace in 2023. We're looking to transform the work world in 2023. This book can go a long way. So please buy at least one for yourself and a couple four others that you know. Cornelia Ganlon, Barbara Mitchell, TGFM Hall of Famers, thank you, thank you, thank you for once again coming back and gracing our airwaves. Continued success, joy, happiness, and fulfillment, all this great work you're doing. And know you always have an open mic here if you continue to do this great writing. We always will love when you come back and visit us, certainly, and share your great expertise.
Thank you
Thank you
so
so
much,
much.
Greg.
Listeners, once again, we're out of time. Greg saying our hope and prayer is that when you wake up on Monday morning, just like Cornelia and Barbara do, you'll say, thank God for Monday. Until next week's episode, have a great week, everyone. Bye-bye.